Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to the Puritan Paperback Series class. We will be looking this year at Jonathan Edwards and a series of sermons entitled Charity and Its Fruit. And we hope to be able to explore this great set of sermons on such an important topic for ourselves. Sometimes I'd like to encourage everyone for this particular series not to be overwhelmed with the thought of reading a Puritan, reading heady material that seems to be difficult to understand and written in an unfamiliar form and language. Well, it is certainly true that there are times when what the Puritans wrote is hard to understand. Their writing style was different. Many of them could have used better editors than what they had. But I believe that this material, like some of the others we've reviewed, but certainly this particular book, falls outside the normal descriptions of what many of you are familiar with regard to Puritan books. Namely that this book we have here, Charity and Its Fruit, is a collection of sermons. It was the word preached. Now, Edwards was very much a preacher. He wrote many, many things over the course of his life, but not all of them were sermons. Some of them were a treatise on this or that subject. But for this particular book, what we're looking at are sermons, the word preached, the word delivered to people, God's word. And this is, I think, in a way completely different than reading what might otherwise be drier material. If you're often intimidated by reading some of these things, I think you'll find this series of sermons very readable. The text is very important in our day and age, charity or love, and the fruit of love and how it is manifested. I believe you'll very much enjoy reading these sermons together. The church has purchased a copy. This particular edition is printed by Banner of Truth and available in handy format here. Contains an introduction and a series of sermons. If you've been hesitant to want to read the Puritans, I suggest that give us another chance. This summer, I think you will profit by the reading of this book, and you will find it very enjoyable. So I would hope that if there are questions or things that don't seem to make sense, that you feel free to ask about those things. We will take time to answer those concerns, and I hope that you will find this particular volume a profitable read. So I'm sure that most everyone has heard of Edwards, and we'll take a look today. Typically, when we start one of these series, we take a little bit of a sketch of the biography of the man that we're going to study. And I've got a series here that's published by Ligonier Ministries. It's two half-hour lectures on Jonathan Edwards by Dr. Jonathan Gerstner. And he has he does a very good job. He gets a little sidetracked. It's this labor of love. I studied Edwards for 40 or 50 years or something. So I've edited the tape down to a little less than 30 minutes to try to bring out some of the meat of what's Edwards is all about. But to show you some of the resources available for Edwards, this is volume one of a three-volume set called The Rational Biblical Theology of Jonathan Edwards. Edwards never lived to write a opus, a systematic theology, a work to cover all of it. This is largely taken from unpublished manuscripts and other things available that Gerstner compiled, and it's available in three volumes, and it can be very helpful. The second book, this is one out of my library, but you'd be welcome to borrow it. It's of a different stride. It's called Jonathan Edwards by Ola Elizabeth Winslow. She won a Pulitzer for this biography of Edwards, very detailed in many respects. Probably the most popular resource available for Jonathan Edwards is this book here, printed by the Banner of Truth. It's available in two volumes, and it contains largely everything you would ever need to read by Edwards. It has a biography in here of him, as well as many of his sermons, his treatises, a few of the miscellanies that he wrote, and there are a lot of things. Squint print, don't read it in a dark room, hold it close. But there are some amazing things written in here. This is an edition that was published sometime in the early 19th century, if I'm not mistaken. It's available in two volumes, and I believe it's available in the church library. A number of individuals have it, but I think the church library also has a copy. There is one other resource that's available that is not completely published yet, and that's done by the Yale University Press. They've been working since, I believe, the 50s or so on the definitive edition of all of Edwards' work via critical edition, lots of footnotes, and it's available. I think originally they intended to publish 27 volumes of his assorted works, and I think they're on 21 now. There was at least a hope of getting them published by the 300th anniversary of his birth, which is this year, but that will never happen at this stage. It's a very critical library edition. I think they sell anywhere from probably $50 to $90 each, so it's out of the price of what most people would buy. But for the serious student of Edwards, it's a must-have if that's what you're looking for. There is a copy of this book for each household that the church has provided. Unfortunately, they ran out of inventory, and the rest won't be here until this week. Our reading assignment for next week will be the introduction and the first sermon. So I've taken the liberty of, if you have a copy of the book in your household, or you can hold off for a little bit, I have made some copies of the first sermon and the introduction. They're all available online and available free of charge. There are a lot of resources given to Edwards on the web. JonathanEdwards.com is probably the most popular one, and it contains a good deal of the manuscripts that have been published or have been assembled. If you'd like to take a copy of the book, there's a spot here where you can jot your initials down so I can keep track of who's got what copies. We need any more. So please avail yourself of either a photocopy of the first sermon or a book, and if you don't get one this week, we'll have it available for next week. Well, let me get started then with the biography proper of Edwards. This will probably, by the way, this series will probably run through most of the summer. I'll be gone for a couple weeks here and there, and we'll have somebody else teaching a class, but we'll take this probably in about 12 weeks or so. Winslow opens her biography she wrote of Jonathan Edwards with these words: "It would be easier to derive Jonathan Edwards from his posterity than from his ancestors. The legacy he left for this country is just simply amazing. His family background is largely unremarkable. He was the son of a minister, a congregational minister named Timothy. We can go back a few generations to see a little of who he was, but he doesn't appear to have come from a great lineage of scholars. He came into this world on October 5th in 1703. He had 4 older and 6 younger sisters. Imagine what life was like in the Edwards home. Well, I'm sure life was soft inside the house, but life was not soft outside the house. There was plenty of danger, for Edwards lived in what was near frontier country at that time. Because he would experience, as others in the congregation there in East Windsor, they would experience real troubles and particular dangers. And there was, for instance, a noteworthy family that had been killed by Indians. And that family, I remember reading one of the notes that the man had been fined for failing to carry a musket to church. So it was much later in life before the real threat. Now, granted, most of the Indians in the area were not the slaughtering kind. It wasn't the kind of trouble that you needed to watch out for that degree. But it wasn't without its own risk. And so there were still dangerous times there, and Edwards grew and was reared in those times. His father, Timothy, graduated from Harvard and had provided a very robust education for this young Jonathan. He took Latin and Greek at an early age, and he was familiar with all the classics. And I guess you could say that his education was noted by his firm insistence on precision, and this would leave an everlasting mark on the study of Edwards. Edwards was a very precise man. In one sense, I think you could call him a medieval scholastic. He pursued things to a degree of precision that is unknown for most folks today in their studies, but this was the way he looked at things. This was the way he studied. Now, lest you think the troubles of Indians and frontier life and such was all difficult, there is an amusing anecdote about Edwards and the Edwards family and his life, that life was not without some pleasures for, and I quote, "Chocolate seems to have been a staple in the Edwards household, as it was in many colonial homes. Chocolate was purchased in cake form, probably unsweetened, and consumed as a beverage, usually at breakfast. Edwards' letters and accounts indicate a steady demand for chocolate by his family, and he often had to rely on travelers to Boston and elsewhere to procure it." So, kids, tell your mom and dad you want to be like Jonathan Edwards and you should eat chocolate for breakfast. It's hard to understand all there is to know about Edwards. You really have to read a number of things to start to get the scope of what his mind was capable of performing. But the word that is often used to describe him is precocious. His insight was keen. He had a lively imagination, a serious interest in metaphysics and philosophy and Calvinism. And this set him apart from many people. Edwards, it is often said by those who have been serious students, that if Edwards had not been a famous Calvinistic preacher, you would still be familiar with the name because of his writings on philosophy and nature. But he wrote many things, and it's a little hard to describe. There is some argument as to precisely when he wrote some of these documents, but he read John Locke, I think when he was about 12 or 13, and had a profound influence on his life. He wrote a number of essays and letters, pieces illustrating his observations upon nature, upon spiders, upon color atoms, you name it. He wrote many, many things. And his mind was, just simply put, it was brilliant. Edwards covered a vast amount of territory in his studies. Now, I say there's some debate about when he wrote some of the things that he's noted for. And what's important to understand about these academic debates, and did he write this when he was 15 or did it happen when he was 20, is not nearly so much as to determine whether or not he was bright, but simply how bright he really was. Edwards was a cut above the rest. Now, his discipline and his rigor were simply extraordinary compared to those of mere mortals, if you will. One example serves, and that's of his famous resolutions. I don't know if you're familiar with the resolutions of Jonathan Edwards. They were written in 1723, thereabouts, over a period of time. And I guess if you've read these things, there's a sense of oddness that comes to mind when you read Edwards' resolutions, as they represent a singleness of purpose utterly foreign to young lives today. You know, say he was 20, 21, somewhere in there when he wrote these. And to see the manner in which he was trying to live his life is hard to comprehend, the structure that he had set out for himself. Edwards knew that he was created to glorify God, and he set about to identify exactly how he should conduct himself to that end. Simply put, this is what he is saying. This is what I want for my life, and this is how I'm going to do it. The resolutions are a good read in and of themselves. Edwards attended Yale College during its early years and completing his undergraduate degree and performing some graduate studies. But bear in mind that the college was founded in 1701, so it was just slightly older than he was. And there were plenty of controversies to be associated with the starting of a college, its location, and who was going to be where, and the tutors and such. He was involved in a number of these. But he did graduate, and he was ordained into the ministry. And I think it's here that is a puzzling point for a lot of the Edwardsian scholars. They wonder why a man given with this kind of insight and mental faculty would give himself to being a minister of the gospel. Well, Pastors, good pastors, care profoundly for their flock, and Edwards was a good pastor. He very much trusted the souls that were given to him for his, in their care. Winslow has three comments that I'd like to read regarding Edwards' pastoral ministry, and then we'll listen to this tape by Jonathan Gerstner. The making of sermons was to Edwards one of the chief ends of his reading, his study, and his thought. What shall I preach? He asked himself 1,000 times and wrote down the answer in many notebooks. Also, in his relation to his flock, he was more a preacher than pastor. For all the weekday disciplining of catechizing, it was a Sunday morning at the ringing of the meeting house bell that Northampton, where he served for many years, had its best chance to know Mr. Edwards. As he mounted high in the pulpit in a quiet voice, without movement or gesture, laid down his doctrine. His tall, spare figure and his deliberate manner gave him a commanding presence. The piercing eyes went everywhere. The thin tones reached the dim corner of the gallery. Every word was distinctly spoken. One does not fidget under such preaching. The young people, a little surprised at themselves at first, felt his authority and mended their ways. Indecent carriage at meeting became a thing of the past. This delicate-looking young man had something to say, and strangely enough, his fragility seemed to increase his power. As a speaker, his chief asset was the quality of his voice, a little languid, with a note of pathos, Samuel Hopkins said, too low for a large assembly, but very distinct and strangely arresting. He particularly commended the well-placed pauses and great distinctness in pronunciation. Thomas Prince spoke of this naturalness of delivery, his low, moderate voice, his freedom from mannerisms, his habitual and great solemnity, looking and speaking as in the presence of God. Like Emerson, Edwards gave the impression of speaking the immediate inspiration of the moment, in spite of the manuscript before him. It's one thing to note on Edwards' preaching, he wrote a lot of things, and sometimes he wrote on small scraps of paper. He'd rise in the middle of the night with some thoughts. He'd find a piece of paper and write these things down. That's why they're publishing 27 volumes of his stuff. They're just mounds of paper with Edwards' thoughts on them. But when he'd get into the pulpit, he'd have his sermons written out, and he would very carefully articulate these things. Now, that was to change to a certain degree under the influence of Samuel Stoddard, his grandfather, with whom was the pastor of his first church. And it would also change with the Great Awakening. Edwards did take part of the Great Awakening, and he was familiar with Whitfield and Tennant and others who had done their preaching. And Edwards was a preacher during the Great Awakening at times. These influences of men like Whitfield and others did have an effect upon Edwards in the way he would preach, but nonetheless, he was an excellent preacher. As a preacher in the open fields, he would not have been a success. Now, remember, that's what Whitfield would do. Whitfield had a very powerful voice and is a very persuasive speaker, and he could move. It is often said that in the Welsh coal mining villages, when Whitfield would preach, you could actually see streaks of white on the faces of those who had been listening because they'd just been covered in coal dust, but he would bring a tear to their eyes, and you could see it washing away the coal. Whitfield could thunder God's judgments across the meadow, hurling his body with great ability and by the magic of his oratory, causing hundreds to go down before him. The quiet intensity of Edwards required walls. Such powers as his is rare and difficult of analysis. John Hooker, a brother minister, called him the most elegant man he ever knew, defining elegance as the power of making strong impressions on the subject of a discourse on the minds of an audience. Others made essentially the same comment. People went away from Whitfield's preaching talking about the great Mr. Whitfield. They went away from the Enfield sermon crying, "What must I do to be saved?" Not even the sermon as a sermon, but only the truth it proclaimed was the final impression. It's high praise indeed for a preacher, and Edwards was a preacher in the first regard. We're going to, we may have to cut this just a little short, but there are three sections on this tape that I'd like for you to hear. The first covers about, it's 10 minutes, it covers a period of his life. The second is just a few minutes long. It covers a short topic on ethics that Edwards was involved in. And the third is approximately 15 minutes, and it's a little broader in its coverage, But here, Gerster talks about sacraments and evangelism and who Edwards was with regard to these things. We're listening to a condensed version of two 30-minute video lectures, and if anyone's interested, I have the full lectures if you'd like to hear those.